Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, heroes, and welcome to another exciting episode of One Shot. I'm James D'Amato, your host and game master. Heroes, this week we are playing The Price of Coal, a storytelling game about labor rights and the Battle of Blair Mountain. It's a historical role-playing game that explores an event in history that isn't well taught in American schools, although it should be, because it is a dark and uncomfortable time in the history of America's labor movement, when coal barons were able to exploit their workers with complete impunity and the full support of the U.S. government, to the point that the military bombarded U.S. citizens to protect the capital interests of the coal industry. For many listeners, this is going to be an emotional ride, and I have to admit, it will not be one of our cheerier series here on One Shot, but I am so impressed with the design of this game. Like Red Carnations on a Black Grave, which inspired this design, this game allows players to insert themselves into history, to learn and experience a difficult period in history by embodying a role. Designer Jennifer Adcock paid special attention to making sure that people who are usually written out of history books aren't cast aside or swallowed up in favor of having an all-white cast. It's an exciting next step in the refreshing trend of historical role-playing approached in a way that undermines a lot of harmful tropes. I hope that appeals to you because The Price of Coal is up on Kickstarter right now, and as of this recording, they have already hit their funding goal. Which means this game is already coming to you if you back, and you don't have to worry about getting it, because in addition to Jennifer Adcock, there is an experienced team behind this game, including Camden Wright and Kate Bullock. The folks behind this project are smart, empathetic, and organized. And I think this game is a really valuable learning and teaching tool. And if there was ever a time for people to learn a bunch of lessons about labor rights in the United States, now is a very good one. You'll be able to find the link to support this game in our show notes. So go out, support this game, and of course, support unions. Now, with all of that out of the way, let's get to the show. All right, heroes, let's meet our party for this week. First up, a voice that should be familiar to you because you are a faithful listener to the One Shot Network and all of its wonderful shows. And that voice is Alex Flanagan. Alex!
Hi, everybody. James, thank you so much for having me on One Shot again. I always love to be here. It's such a great time.
I was very excited to get you back, especially for this particular concept. It felt so right. I'm truly thrilled.
I've literally run my own game on One Shot, and this is still the most exciting One Shot invitation I've ever gotten. So I'm amped, truly.
Alex, do you have any plugs, any places that you would like to direct our listeners to where they can find you and your lovely works?
Yeah, so I'm sure that everybody already knows this because, as you mentioned, they are faithful listeners to the One Shot Network. But if this is your first introduction, then I am also the keeper for A Horror Borealis, which is on the One Shot Network, which is a Monster of the Week actual play campaign set in the small town of Revenant, Alaska, where fun and funky things are happening all the time in the year 1996. We are coming back from our sort of show hiatus very, very soon with a new season of adventures, so that'll be very exciting, and to keep an eye out for it. That's at A Horror Borealis on Twitter. You can find me personally at Coffee Detective, COFF33 Detective on Twitter, and I'm there way more than I should be, so you'll see something.
Hey, yeah, wow, aren't we all, huh? Yeah, listeners, I really do recommend checking that out, and it is the perfect time to catch up to enjoy the new season. Now, Alex, we also start this with an icebreaker question, and for you, that is, what is the most rebellious thing you've ever done at a job?
So part of my job, as you may have just sort of picked up from context is podcasting. And, you know, I do a lot of freelance work like this. And one time, actually, in fact, today I was on this sound check that we were doing for an episode of One Shot. And then Mel texted me and was like, oh, I wanted to come say hey, but you guys are recording. And I was like, you should do it anyway. You know, not to like be the bad boy of podcasting at this table or anything right now, but I think that was a pretty risky move on my part.
Alex is an irrepressible rebel that has no respect for authority at all. And I know if they just applied themselves, they could really make something, but they won't. I'm afraid they're going to throw it all away.
I'm going to be stuck being the fifth most famous West Virginian in podcasting for the rest of my life.
That is definitely a great thing to put on a business card. But I want to get to actually introducing a new voice to the One Shot Network. Someone that I really hope we grow to hear a lot more of. And that is Bees. Bees, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, James. Thank you for having me.
Bees, since this is your first time on the One Shot Network, certainly, where can people find you and what do you do?
I do a lot of variety streaming. Like, for the most part, I've just been focusing on horror games on my channel on Twitch, which is big_bees, B-E-A-Z. And that's just because people love scaring me and they love clipping it. And I'm like, cool, all right, if this is what you want, I will be scared closer to death every stream if that's what you want.
I mean, I love watching horror game streams because I'm too scared to play a horror game, but I would like to know what happens in them. So that's pretty much how I consume all that content.
That's exactly what I thought. Like, I was watching, I remember it started with one of those Telltale games. Mm. I forgot the name of it, but I know Man of Medan is one of the games in that series. And I was watching something. I was like, oh my God, this is horrifying, but I can't stop watching. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was exciting, but I just started picking up some of the horror games and I was like, okay, this isn't too bad. I mean, I got a jump scare here and there, but it's still fun. And then I started introducing ways for my viewers to jump in and scare me even more. And it's just gone. It's gone to hell from there.
Well, this sounds absolutely chaotic, and I feel like I need to check it out. Where will fantastic. People be able to find where you stream and any place where they could pick up videos on demand?
For right now, mainly just on Twitch, big_bees. On Mondays and Fridays, I'm on RF Chaos on Twitch. The Monday is the Tie-In Bees Power Hour, where we read crazy news articles from around the world and just react to them. And I also answer questions as random characters that come into my mind. Fridays on RF Chaos, we play Sparrows, which were pretty much just space pirates. Ooh. And I am a crazy old turtle man that makes lots of concoctions and just pretty much screws over the party accidentally every chance I get. It's a blast.
Oh, that sounds like a delight. But before we move on, I do want to ask our icebreaker question to you. And that is, what is the most rebellious thing you've ever done at a job?
I would have to say that would be when I was working as a cable tech. And, you know, the fun thing about that is you have to go into various people's houses all the time. And they're not always the best of places. So I remember going into somebody's house and, well, I went there like to their house and they were like, oh, we have none of our TVs are working, blah, blah, blah. So I went and fixed what I thought, you know, what I found to be the issue. So then they had a TV in the garage and a bunch of TVs inside the house. So I checked the one in the garage. It was working fine. And I'm like, all right, cool. Now I just need to check inside the house. And she was like, sure, no problem. And she opened the door. And the first thing I noticed is there is no light from the outside. Everything is just blacked out. And I was like, okay, that's fine. Not a problem at all. Ignore that red flag. And then I looked down and I saw a literal herd of cats running by. And I was like, huh, that's not good. And I took two steps in and just got smacked in the face with a wall of ammonia. And like my nose, eyes, throat started burning. I went to the first TV, which was like a foot away from where I was, turned it on, saw some kind of picture, and was like, you're doing great. Everything looks good. Have a great day. Bye. And just left. I didn't verify anything. I was like, no, I didn't run any tests. I was like, I'm done here. I'm leaving. And yeah, that was not fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like they should prepare you for a situation like that.
They don't.
I think perhaps we will discover working conditions that might be somehow worse today. but let's move on to another familiar voice. And that is Palomi. Palomi, welcome back.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me back.
I am really excited. Palomi, it seems like it should be impossible for people not to know you, as they are all faithful listeners to every show on the One Shot Network.
Every show.
in case people somehow got confused or misled, could you explain to them where they can find all the cool stuff that you do?
Yeah, so I am not on Twitter as much these days, but I am on Courier's Call. We just finished the season 2 Kickstarter, so that should be updating pretty soon here. So definitely give that a listen if you like giant birds and kids getting into mischief and all kinds of other fun stuff. I mean, that's my biggest plug. I love that show and I'm on it. So
mm-hmm. And it's good. And one of the reasons that it's good is because you're on it. And if you do happen to be a Twitter gremlin like myself, you can also enjoy some of the world building work that Palomi did over on the Warriors Call Twitter feed several months ago. They tweeted about the captains of the Jiltaran Islands, and we got some extremely cool pictures by Jessica Chinsky of these captains, who are all extremely attractive.
Yes.
It's definitely worth a look. Palomi.
Yes.
What's the most rebellious thing that you've ever done in a job?
So I'm not going to talk about my current job.
Nice. Smart. Love it.
Because I'd like to keep it. No, I haven't done anything bad. Everyone calm down. I'll say one of the most rebellious things I did as a volunteer once was we were at a sort of summertime event outdoors, and I was in charge of cutting watermelons, and we had quite a few watermelons to process, but I was given 2 knives and 1 volunteer, and I dismissed the other volunteer, wielded both knives, and was more efficient on my own.
Wow.
And that's why they call you 2 knives. Yeah.
That's why they call me 2 knives below me.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Terrifying. Electrifying. That's great. Now I want to introduce the final voice on this show and another new voice to the One Shot podcast, and that is Jennifer Adcock. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
We are really excited to have you because today we are playing, I don't want to accidentally forget the name of the game and say the wrong name of the game.
Don't worry.
The Price of Coal. That's right. I was going to say the Coal War, and I was like, that's not true, James.
Not even.
It's funny because we did change the name of the game halfway through development, and I sometimes still say the old one.
Okay. I'm glad that I'm not alone there. But today we are playing The Price of Coal, which is a game that you designed.
Yes. I've been working on this game for a couple of years. The Price of Coal is a story game about the West Virginia Coal Wars, a too often forgotten tragedy in American history, and a forgotten workers' uprising. So this is very exciting.
It does seem that when America does bad things, it's just so easy for the historical record to forget it.
Mm-hmm. Which
it seems really odd that things work out that way. But we'll interrogate that through the game in a minute. Before we get there, is there a place where listeners who, you know, appreciate this game and like what you're doing can find you and your work and get ready to support your game?
Yes, so this will be on Kickstarter starting August 25th. Before, during, and after that, you can find me on Twitter at JenCatWrites, JenCatWrites. I'm on Twitter so much that it's in my bio. Sorry, I never shut up.
Yeah, so follow Jennifer for that good content. We love content.
Yes.
Jennifer, I do want to ask you before I turn the game over to you and we start to play, what is the most rebellious thing that you've ever done at a job?
So, you know, the retail worker's fantasy of getting to tell off a rude customer.
Oh, yes.
I worked for a department store chain in college, and at one point I had an old woman customer. She was trying, I think she was trying to use like coupons and discount things for another chain entirely. Like it was a store that was not the store she was in. And I was like, I can't accept these. I'm sorry. There's nothing I can do. She calls the manager. This woman, she calls me like a stupid good for nothing. And I was like, all right, fuck it. I don't need this. And I walked out.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't.
That was a good day.
You stupid good for nothing. Accept these coupons for another business.
Yeah.
I'm going to go and not return.
Yeah, I'm out of here. Thank you.
This
goodbye
says,
forever.
With a purchase of $19 or more, I get 2 free any topping pizzas.
Man, this is a Wendy's.
Surrender the pizzas to me. Good. I hope we had fun getting all those laughs out, because now we're about to explore one of the unrecognized deep American tragedies that's in our shared cultural history. Jennifer, please take us away to a fantasy land called America.
All right. So this game being inspired by me standing on the shoulders of giants, I will start with some read aloud text for us all to bring us in. Price of Coal is a story game about the West Virginia coal wars and the year leading up to the Battle of Blair Mountain. Together, we will explore the lives of the coal miners and their loved ones as they fight for their rights and for their union. This is a tragic game with no winning. There is no way to avert the final battle in the story we will tell. Our characters can only support and care for each other as best as they can. The events of this game include poverty, illness, and violence. We, the players, will also support and care for each other as we navigate these themes. We will check in with each other, use safety tools, and respect the importance of player comfort and agency over the importance of the game. Place the X card on the table where everyone can reach it. Use the X card to calibrate the tone and content of your game. If anything in the game makes you uncomfortable or crosses a personal boundary, tap the X card or say, "I'm X-carding that." Or since we are playing virtually, say, "I'm X-carding that," put an X in chat or something similar. That content is removed from the game, no questions asked.
I advise folks to verbally say it, not just because chat is easy to miss because it does not make a sound in Zoom, but also that will show up on the audio. And if it is something that, you know, you feel comfortable including, that like, "Hey, I would like to take this out," we can show off the X card working in real time. But also any player is also able to go, "Hey, I'm X carding that. And also I would like to not talk about that on the audio." And you can say that as well.
Fabulous. Thank you. All right. So we have sorted the event cards of our game by season, creating 4 piles for fall, winter, spring, and summer. We will play with 5 cards, 5 events for each season. The ordinance card must be included in the summer pile.
That doesn't sound like a friendly card.
Yeah, it's fine. It's going to be great, I promise.
You may be shocked to learn not many of these cards are friendly.
Oh!
Yeah. I have sorted the character cards into miners and their family members. So I will not read that card out loud because I will not trouble you with the steps that I have already completed. We will place the minor characters face up where all players can see them. Each player will select which minor they want to play, going around the table until each player has chosen. Then place the family characters face up where all players can see them. Each player will select which family character they want to play, going around the table in reverse order. So the player who chose their minor last will choose their family character first. Choose a character from 2 different players for each of your characters to have a relationship with. Going around the table one character at a time, ask and answer the relationship questions on each character card. Discuss your answers aloud with each other, writing the answers down as you go. An individual player's characters do not need to have a relationship established. Both characters will not appear in the same scene. We do not ask you to play 2 characters at once, because that would be very silly and confusing. We will begin play by reading the introduction text cards. If anyone would like to be the first player at that point, they may volunteer to do so. The first player will draw the top fall event card and read it aloud. The active player will frame the scene, providing context for which characters are participating in the scene, where it's taking place, and what's going on during the scene. Use sense descriptions where you can. What sounds and smells are your characters experiencing? What can they see or feel? These can help bring a scene to life and clarify the situation for your characters. The active player may ask for suggestions from other players for framing the scene. Once the scene has been framed, begin a scene of in-character play. A scene is played like a conversation, where players say what their characters do and speak for them. Leave room for everyone to speak, but don't be afraid to describe the detail of small moments and actions. Scenes are generally individual points in time. If you find yourself thinking about moving to another location or advancing ahead in time, consider making that a separate scene instead. Scenes should typically take a few minutes to play. End the scene when the prompt on the card is resolved. After the first scene has been played, continue clockwise with players drawing cards and framing scenes until all the fall cards have been played. Read the fall to winter transition card, then resume play with the winter event cards. Repeat for each season. So I'm going to ask you all to imagine right now that I'm handing you some cards. Give each player two interlude cards for a 4-5 player game. Interlude cards may be played at any time out of turn order to create a small scene with only two characters. The game and the story end when the ordinance card in the summer pile is drawn and played. After this final scene, everyone may choose to narrate an epilogue or a conclusion for their characters. The narrative ends here, so this will be your final chance to shape a conclusion for your characters. And that's the whole rules of the game.
All right.
So let's get started with some fun character creation, or character setup, I should say. These are the six coal miner characters that we have for this game. I can go ahead and choose last, because I have played them all before. If anyone feels an immediate kinship with one of these characters, feel free to go first, and then we can just sort of loop through in Zoom order from there.
I can go first. I was looking at Lester.
All right. Bees, you want to play Lester?
Yes, please.
Fabulous.
Can I please grab Kit Parsons?
Certainly.
Kit Parsons really missed their calling as like an ace reporter, I think.
So funny story about the family member characters. Just one second, because there is a reporter. So I believe James is next.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with John Bailey. It does look like a Hemsworth might be playing John Bailey, just based on the character art.
Oh yes, these character sketches are phenomenal. I love them.
It's one of those secret Hemsworths they don't let out
a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. The like fifth or sixth Hemsworth. I'm not actually sure how many of them.
There's actually 20.
Yeah, it's part of the United States after the first Thor movie set up a secret Hemsworth reserve in case anything should happen. We can release more Hemsworths.
Very wise.
I will be going with Andre Pellegrini.
Okay. And I think I will take Nathaniel. All right. So then we go to our family member characters. So I'll pick first and we'll go in that reverse order. I think I am going to take Sarah Bailey. Sarah, who is John's wife. Mm-hmm. Also, Paloni.
I was actually really drawn to Hannah York.
Okay. I believe James is next.
Viola Pellegrini, for sure.
Viola, fabulous. Alex?
All right, so I'm trying to remember one of the minors we didn't pick, right? Which one was that?
We did not pick.
Was it David?
Yes, we did not choose David. We could still have Simon appear. That's totally fine. We could have Simon as a character without having David in the game.
That's fine. I think I'll do George.
Okay. And these.
I guess that just leaves me with either Simon or Eliza.
Yep.
So, I guess let's go Eliza.
Cool. These are going to be playing my mom. It's great.
I always... Did you eat today?
All right. So starting with that same order, and let me go back to our coal miners. We're going to do relationships. Yay. Everybody loves relationships. Mm-hmm. So on your character's card, there's two questions. So we'll start with Bees and Lester. If you want to read off Lester's card and then do some character questions, you can pick any two other characters played by other players to have that type of relationship with.
So Lester Baird is a black coal miner, older brother of George Baird. Lester is a jaded miner who has been working in these mountains since he was old enough to hold a pickaxe. He knows what it takes to survive, both deep in the mine and in the company of the town. And I read the questions to you?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. The questions are, why do you blame them and how do you teach them? So now we need two other characters.
Yeah, so you can pick any two of anyone else's characters to sort of have that type of relationship with either minors or family members, and I can flip back and forth between these as desired.
Kit Parsons and Viola.
So which question do you want to answer for which character?
And these are from my questions, right?
Yeah, so why do you blame them and how do you teach them?
Okay, so I would say, how do you teach them for Kit?
How does Lester teach Kit? That's a fun dynamic.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking, because like, since Kit is also a coal miner, I would assume that they kind of were put under me to train them and show them how to, you know, the ins and outs. And then why do you blame them for Viola?
All right. Viola does, like, do cleaning for folks in the community, so I could see some sort of connection happening there, but why do you blame Viola specifically? Because she is, I believe, a first-generation immigrant, so she probably doesn't speak much English, too, which is... I could see that causing problems.
I would have to say probably caused a rift between him and his brother, because he was working, because she's let me look at her card again.
Oh yeah, she is Andre's daughter.
Cleaning and what? Okay. He was probably coming home after hit the mines and tried to offer help, because she looked like she was struggling with something, and he tried to offer some assistance. She didn't fully understand him and just kind of, you know, took it the wrong way, which then ended up getting the police involved, and now his brother assumes, you know, something negative about him, and he's like, no, I was just trying to offer some help because she looked like she was struggling, and so then it caused them to start fighting between one another.
Already
breaking my heart in character creation.
Brutal. Can I make a quick suggestion about the relationship between Lester and Kit?
Sure.
So when you were mentioning, like, maybe being my mentor in the mines as Kit, I have this thought where I know that Kit sort of, like, as a teenager, and this is like a classically historical coal mine story, so, like, thank you so much for including this narrative in the game. I really love it. Where basically, like, I have been living as a man since a teenager to, like, work in the coal mines and be able to provide for my family. I think that you as my mentor are maybe one of the few people who knows that I'm not biologically, like, born as a man. That this is a choice that I have made in my life to live in this way. And I want to maybe play a little bit with that relationship in terms of you being someone who, I don't know if I chose to give you this information or if it was just something that you figured out because you were kind of the one showing me the ropes. But I think for that reason, very early on, I chose kind of not to really learn from anyone else because I was like, the fewer people that can know this, the better.
Yeah. I'm thinking maybe there was some kind of incident, maybe like a mini cave-in or something, and I went to grab you to move you out the way. And that's why I'm like, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah, hold on. Definitely.
And then you were like, oh crap, and then we talked about it, and I was just kind of, you know, Lester's like, whatever, I don't really understand it, but I'm not gonna, you know, as long as you're here to do a good job, we don't have an issue.
Yeah, that feels right to me.
Lester has always struck me as a, you know what, that's none of my business type of person. So, all right, so that is Lester. So let's go to Andre and Palomi.
Yeah.
Or no, actually, I'm sorry. I'm reading off of order on my thing. I think actually Kit and Alex were next.
Okay, sorry. Perfect. Well, let's see here. Catherine Kit Parsons is a white, non-binary coal miner, the older sibling of Hannah York. Kit Parsons has been living as a man since their teenage years in order to support their family with mining. They have developed a valuable reputation for keeping their calm in a crisis. They are loyal, perhaps to a fault. So my two character questions are, why do you love them, and how do you surprise them? And let's see, I'm torn between using one of my character questions on my sister, who I do want to have a relationship with, versus like trying to spread it out a little bit. I think I want to spread it out a little bit. I think I want to have as many different connections as possible in this complicated web. So I think I'm looking first at why do you love them? And I think that I love John Bailey. I think that to me,
thank you. Yes,
he is like, I think to me, he's this idealist. He's this stand up, like protagonist coded guy in my real life. And as far as me being like a young, vulnerable person trying to shape my concept of what I want my masculinity to look like, I think that I look to John Bailey. I think that he's someone who stands out in a crowd to me as like, this is the kind of person that as an awkward 13-year-old person trying to like figure out what I'm doing, like this is the person that I started building myself after. And I think like when I first started working in the mines, it was kind of like all these awkward moments of like, oh, what does John do with his hands when he's on a lunch break? Like, what is John doing with his hair? How does John wear his hat? And I think that it started out as that, but like as I've matured and grown a little bit, I have realized that there's like an ideological side to this too, that the way that he espouses his values and the way that he carries himself, like those are things that I want for myself. And I don't really know necessarily even like what the nature of that attraction or that love is. I just know that I feel very strongly about this individual.
I love that.
For how do I surprise them? I think that I surprise Andre because he is this person who has this feeling that mine work is beneath him and it's a life that nobody would ever choose for themselves. And I am a person who has like actively chosen to pursue this life. And I don't even think that he necessarily knows like the reasons why I've done that, because there are a few people who do, but I am like adamant about my work and invested in my work in a way that it doesn't seem like anybody really should be about it. And partially it's because I can't afford to lose it. Like my family only has me providing for them. But part of it also is that so much of my identity and the identity that I am desperate to keep for myself in this community is based on that work. And I am defined through my relationship to it. And I think that my intensity about that is very surprising to this man who doesn't understand why anybody would feel that kind of passion about this kind of work. Like, he's an artist. He's someone from a very passionate culture, but doesn't get why somebody would want to do this kind of labor in this way.
Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the mid-roll. Heroes, we don't have a lot to announce in our mid-roll this week, so let's just thank some of our backers on Patreon. Ian Clark, thank you so much. Pascal G, thank you. A. Gelderman, thank you very much. July, thank you. Ryan Potome, thank you. Ekfluem Angawa, thank you so much. Duncans and Dragons, thank you. Roberto Shindy, thank you so much. H. Elizabeth Walker, thank you very much. Susanna Pefferer, thank you. Joseph Abramson, thank you so much. Varinder Singh Binder, thank you. Mackenzie Bruce, thank you so much. Alex Skolnick, thank you. Mara Linden, thank you so much. Ezra Stevenson, thank you very much. Amy Rosenbaum, thank you. Den Schumann, thank you so much. And Alex DeVoe, thank you. Thanks again to everyone who supports us on Patreon. We wouldn't be able to make One Shot without you. And also, a huge thanks to the One Shot heroes who were a little bit more patient this week. Obviously, this episode's coming out a day late. We had some logistical problems on our end, but we also had some baby-driven problems on our end. We're just getting a preview of what the One Shot Network is going to be like with a babied staff. We are going to try and work and get better at this, but we really do appreciate everybody's patience. In the meantime, I think this episode is absolutely worth it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now then, with all of that out of the way, let's get back to the show.
this to James with John Bailey.
Okay. I've been thinking about this. So I've got, why do you trust them? I'm going to throw that over to Andre Pellegrini. And it is because John Bailey is in love with Andre Pellegrini.
Ooh.
I'm so excited you've said that, James.
Yes. I like had the thought, like, John Bailey needs to be in love with someone. He is at odds with his wife. It is so perfect. Because, like, reading his wife's card, she is like an organizer amongst the spouses and family members. So idealistically, we're aligned. Why are we at odds? Well, it's because John Bailey is a gay man who is married, because that's what you had to do. Yeah. And Andre being this artist who talks about, like, how this way of living is not worthwhile. I think John is an idealist who I think believes that the way that coal mining works right now is obviously not worthwhile, because people aren't treated well, but in the way the world should be, a man should be able to mine a little bit of coal and then go out and do a bit of sculpting, because that's what a complete life is. So he definitely preaches to Andre there. And I think definitely, how do you persuade them? It's got to go to Lester Baird. I think Lester is the person that John sees kind of as a linchpin in, like, if we're going to get organized, if we're going to change the way things work, that has to start with someone who has experience, who like clearly is respected by the other miners in the community, like Lester, thinking that it is worthwhile to take the risk and actually, you know, push for organization.
So since, like, Lester's been there forever, he's mm-hmm. just kind of the unofficial leader of the or like head of the miners.
Right. If I stand up and go, look, we can unite, we can work together, from each according to ability, to each according to his need. If Lester goes, ugh, then everything is sunk. But if Lester goes, this kid has something that we should listen to, then the older miners and the younger miners, like, have the ability to come together. So I think John Bailey is almost an annoying, like, puppy to Lester. Like, after work, at the bars, whatever, you know, John is, like, preaching at Lester about the way things ought to be and how we could change them together. You know, in moments that he is not stealing privately with Andre, he is working hard on, like, if I can just get Lester to agree, then everything can be different.
Very nice.
I like it.
And that actually segues very well over to Andre and Paloni.
Yeah, so Andre Pellegrini is an Italian immigrant coal miner, father of Viola Pellegrini. Andre is an Italian sculptor who came to America seeking new opportunities, but found none were available to him. Debt and anti-immigrant sentiment trapped him in mine work, which he feels is beneath him and his daughter. So my questions are, why do you reject them, and how do you manipulate them? And I have a fantastic answer to the second one.
We can start with the second one if you want.
Yeah, so I think it's John Bailey that I'm manipulating, and I don't think it's a knowing type of manipulation. I have a lot of stories from Italy and my childhood and how I grew up, and I love nothing more than sharing those stories with anyone who will listen. And John is more than willing to listen, so I feel like I'm filling his head with these almost idealistic, I mean, he's a very idealistic guy, so kind of just filling his head more with these ideals that are dubiously attainable at the current moment. And I think to that end, too, why do you reject them? I think this applies to Lester Baird. He seems kind of like a pillar of the community. His jadedness and his kind of just dogged desire to survive frustrates me, because I know that life can be more than that. And it almost feels like, I think whenever stuff goes down, I find his approach frustrating and not aggressive enough, almost.
Ooh, nice.
So I'm in love with the triangle that we've created.
Yes. This is
I am
good.
Like fascinated.
I'm ready to hurt some feelings. Like
I was gonna say, there's some
yes.
There's a, I don't know. I don't want to like talk about it before it happens, but there are like moments that I'm already visualizing in my mind.
Oh yeah.
That
oh, yeah.
Handed
oh,
me yeah. of like beautiful. Deep, profound personal tragedy that I'm really upset about.
Like the more you guys are explaining things, especially in regards to having ties with Lester, it's fleshing out Lester for
100%.
And I'm like, okay, so these are this is gonna happen. This conversation's
yes, I did
happening.
My job. Okay.
Yeah.
So Nathaniel Friedman is a black coal miner, the son of Eliza Friedman. Nathaniel is a hard worker known as a good man in the mine. He prides himself on knowing when to keep his head down and when to stand up for his fellow workers. He leans heavily on his faith in the hard times. So for my character questions, I have, why do you praise them and how do you watch them? And I was kind of thinking that I think Nathaniel really admires Kit. I think there's a real similarity between us two as being like, we both have that reputation, right? The reputation to uphold as being the good man in the mines, which is maybe the highest praise you can give someone in that type of setting.
Kit is desperate for someone to call them a good man anywhere, so this is very
that
nice.
That too. So Nathaniel is like, if anyone tries to be like, Kit didn't do this or something, whatever, Nathaniel's like, no. Actually.
Thank you so much.
And then how do you watch them? I think Nathaniel is maybe a little bit distrusting of George. George being the deputy sheriff. I don't know that George has necessarily even ever given Nathaniel a reason to distrust him. I just think that Nathaniel understands maybe the contradictions of the position George is in and is aware that his safety is not necessarily always going to be George's priority. So he watches him and is very aware of what's happening. So that is all of our minor characters. Now we're also going to snake back in the other direction with our family members. So I'll start with Sarah Bailey. Sarah Bailey is a young white woman married to John Bailey. Sarah is coming into her own as a leader among the minor spouses. She feels powerless to protect her husband, but is only starting to recognize the sway she has in this community. She dreams of a better life here, not in some distant city. So her questions are, why do you tolerate them and how do you restrain them? And I have so many questions myself about why Sarah tolerates Andre, given our little triangle.
Damn, yeah.
I think it is because, like, even if she recognizes that her marriage with John is not necessarily a love marriage, it is something that we did out of a sense of necessity.
Does she recognize that?
Yeah,
I'm really
actually,
curious.
That is
I also
question.
Am not sure.
Okay.
But I think she does recognize that John is happier when Andre's around. Mm. And she does value that. Even if, you know, I don't know yet, perhaps we'll play to find out what Sarah's awareness is. She does, at the very least, acknowledge and value John's happiness.
Yeah. Yeah, and it does seem like, again, we're idealistically aligned, so
absolutely.
It would make sense for, like, it's not like I resent being married to you, it's just I'm physically not attracted to you, but I love talking to you, so yeah.
And then how do you restrain them? I actually think we could have a really interesting dynamic with Sarah and Hannah, because Hannah is all about wanting to get out of here, whereas Sarah is all about improving things here, where we are, and not just giving up and fleeing to somewhere better. So I kind of think that maybe when Hannah gets a bit too, we should just give up, we need to get out of here, this is not working, no one should stay here, I think maybe Sarah is able to talk Hannah back down from that and get her to see the value in trying to improve our situation here and now.
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot.
And speaking of, that actually does segue over to Hannah for Kalani. We keep doing that.
Perfect.
So I'm actually going to read Hannah's card out loud. Hannah York is a white midwife, younger sister of Kit Parsons. Hannah is a midwife who has helped bring many babies into the town only to see them wasted in the mines. She wants to protect them as best she can, but in truth, she also wants to flee this horrible place. And her questions are, why do you envy them? and how do you control them? I feel like the envy aspect kind of applies to the Baileys in general, mm-hmm. Sarah and John, because they are able to kind of view this place as something worth fighting for, something worth liberating in some capacity. And even though, you know, Sarah especially is able to kind of talk Hannah back from that ledge, Hannah cannot see this place that way. She has a very hard time kind of visualizing what could be. And I think a lot of those feelings of like fear and needing to bolt, they're just things that she needs, that she's dealing with on a regular basis. How do you control them? So I want this one to kind of be spread around too, because like,
sure.
I'm trying to think about what this means. And I feel like, Alex, if you're okay with this,
yeah,
I want this to apply to Kit from that sort of midwifery perspective, as far mm-hmm. as like, Kit is not biologically male. Mm-hmm. There are special health things that need to kind of be taken care of in that situation. And I think Kit's sister is sort of the person who helps her with that. But then also coming from a place of concern, it's like, you have to be careful. You can't do certain things. It's that voice in Kit's life that's like, don't, can't, if you're cool with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, totally. I think that's great. And I also would love to pitch something else to you. And if you're not comfortable with this, like, I completely understand. I don't want to put you in a position where you are like having to act out something that you disagree with.
Sure.
But I think in a non-malicious way, like, yours is a life and a career that celebrates like the beauty and life-givingness of femininity in
yeah.
a community that is racked by like, honestly, the inherent violence of masculinity. And like, your life and your community have been shattered by these ideals of like, what masculine strength is and what it looks like. And I think it stresses you out to
yeah.
see me rejecting what you would see as like a way that I could be doing a lot more good. But at the same time, like, our family needs this.
Yeah. Yeah. I do kind of like that characterization that a lot of who Hannah is as a person is kind of hidden behind these various sources of fear, or not fear, like, it's not misunderstanding so much, but like, just not getting why Kit wouldn't want to do things the traditional way.
Right.
Just to stay under the radar and not yeah. put themselves at more risk.
Cool.
I love it. That will bring us to James and Viola.
All right. I've been thinking about this. I'll read the card first, of course. Viola is still learning the ropes of life in America, and she doesn't want to make trouble. She takes on jobs during the day, cleaning and washing for wealthier women in the community. She fears for her father's health almost as much as she fears this strange new country. I think when we say wealthier women in the community, it is not hard. You know, being an immigrant in the United States, especially an Italian immigrant at this time, it may surprise some listeners to learn that the Italian community was not well liked for a very long time in our history mm-hmm. in the United States. So anybody who is established even remotely would probably be wealthier. And because we had this dust up with the Bairds earlier, I want the why do you lie to them to be because I literally don't understand them. There was a moment where things got very heated and police got involved. Viola, having very little English, just tried to agree to whatever people were saying to her to get the situation to stop. And that escalated it further. So anytime anyone said anything, she just went, yes. And she doesn't understand why people got angry, and she doesn't understand why people are still angry. She just wanted to go home.
Oh, poor thing.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so it's just something like she was struggling, and Lester came up, offered some assistance, kind of spooked her a bit, and she jumped back and was like, no, no, no. Somebody saw her doing the no, 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 and it was like, oh, what's going on? She's being accosted.
She thought she was in trouble. Like, she literally,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
He came over to help. She thought she was doing something wrong, and she tried to apologize. Uh-huh. And some goddamn neighbor saw that and called the police.
Yep.
So yeah, this is a situation is where wonderful. Literally no one is at fault. And like, also, yeah. This is definitely a community where the police would not look favorably on the Italian immigrant either in this situation.
Yeah, so no.
It can only
There's
make it
no
worse.
There's no winners
for
in this situation.
There is no winning. And you know, I think from Georgia's standpoint, it's like, this is the nightmare scenario of like two people in the community who are probably the most vulnerable. And there's nobody I can side with that will make this go away. Like, there's nothing that can happen here that will make this
go away. You're sitting there and you're like, crap, okay, I have her on this side, but I have my brother too.
Yeah.
But I can't play favorites. And Lester's like, what the hell? You know me. You know this is beyond my character. Why is this even a thing?
Right.
What the hell is going on here?
And knowing that, like, that's... wanting to believe that I know Lester well enough to know that that's not anything that he would ever do, but at the same time, like, being almost angry because, like, dude, like, how could you not know better? Like,
and I asked this woman a direct question, and she said yes. Why is she lying?
Yep.
Right.
Can I add an extra layer to this whole thing?
Please.
Why not? Yeah.
I don't think she's told Andre anything. Like,
oh my God.
I feel like he'd be able to help clarify, and I don't want him to.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Yeah, because again, she doesn't want to make trouble. So she literally, when she went home, she was rattled, and she tried to pretend like she wasn't rattled.
Yeah.
A layer that I want to throw on, it's not related to the questions at all. I think Viola's mother probably died in transit. Like, that's kind of the sense that I'm getting.
Sure.
That tracks for me too, yeah.
But the other question is, how do you indulge them? And I think this one goes out to Sarah Bailey. I kind of think Sarah is probably one of the only people who talks to Viola. Viola tries to understand Sarah, but can't really. But like, Sarah treats Viola like a woman, like a person.
Yeah.
And, you know, if Sarah asks Viola to do something, like, she will do it because she's really missing that kind of human contact. And also, that a older feminine figure in her life. She just doesn't have access to that right now.
Absolutely. And especially this does raise a question for me of, do Sarah and John have children?
That is a really good question. And I,
because I'm kind of envisioning that they don't, and
can
Sarah
I make a
almost
suggestion?
Sees. Yes.
I think there have been one or more miscarriages.
Oh, entirely possible, yeah.
Which
oh,
is, no. And again, I'm sorry, but historically, like, this is a thing that shows up again and again in stories like this. And I
completely
think it's an interesting narrative, especially for these two, because there's all this complicated stuff, and I don't want to foist it on anybody. I want you to, like, just
no,
take
I
this
think
as
that's...
you will and throw it away if you don't like it. But for both of them, it's almost, and I don't want to use this word carelessly, it's almost a relief to not have children because... one, it frees them both up to do the kind of work they want to do, but then you have, like, Sarah, who's more interested in being an organizer than a mother, and you have John, who's not even interested in the marriage, and so you've got Sarah grappling with this, like, this inherent sort of feeling of failure, of femininity that comes with having had one or multiple miscarriages.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also this kind of, like, bitter inward relief of, like, this is one thing I don't have to deal with because I have important work to do. And then both of them also not being able to help but feel like this has been part of what's at the core of their marriage falling apart.
Well, and honestly, John, I think, is pretty vested in it working because that means they won't have to keep trying.
Yeah.
Which is not his favorite thing in the world.
Sure, yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of complexity swirling around that. But, like, to tie out Viola's piece in this, the how do you indulge them is important. Mm-hmm. I think it is showing up to whatever, like, organizing meetings or whatnot, you know, just being there to be generally supportive because she's looking for any kind of connection that people can throw out.
Aww.
And if Sarah is, like, happy to, like, be in a surrogate mother role while also being like, this is great, I've got an enthusiastic person who understands, like, why this organizing is important, and Viola's like, sure,
I'm here.
I'm here.
Yes.
I showed up.
I love that.
I can definitely see those relationships unfolding too with the Pellegrinis, just going over to the Baileys from time to time, like on a pretty regular schedule.
Oh yeah, of course.
Y'all, I am stressed, and we've not told a single bit of story yet.
Do we even need to roleplay at this point? We've already got our story.
Here are our sad people. Just take them and do whatever you want.
And here's the ordnance card. We did it.
All right, so that will bring us to George with Alec.
Yeah, hi. So George Baird is a black deputy sheriff, the younger brother of Lester Baird. George's first duty is to the law, and everything else comes second. He has to keep the peace. He has to keep the townsfolk alive. Sometimes he cannot do both. So my first character question is one that I immediately know, which is, why do you amuse them? And the answer is that I amuse Eliza enormously, and I don't think it's in a good way. I think my entire, like, my whole concept of my life and my role in it is a joke to Eliza. Eliza has seen... Bees is, like, nodding furiously. Yeah,
oh,
like...
Yeah, 100%.
This is a woman who cannot fathom why I would be a cop in the first place, and who, beyond that, does not understand why I would like to play act at seeming like this is going to be anything that's going to afford me some role in justice in life. Like, as if I can do anything in that uniform that's going to make a meaningful impact... As if I'm going to be allowed to do anything that's going to make a meaningful impact in the lives of the people who should matter more to me in my community. And I think that she thinks that's funny. I think that Eliza knows damn well that when all the chips are down and when every card falls, she's still going to be sitting in her rocking chair knowing exactly what she knew before all of this started. And I'm going to be looking a damn fool.
She told him so many times, but no, I mean, he needs to learn. He's going to have to learn one way or another. And then when everything happens, he's going to come on back and she's going to be like, oh, I'm sorry, what happened? Oh, the thing I told you was going to happen this whole time has happened. Oh, isn't that funny?
Yeah, exactly. And she's probably right, but there's not a thing I can do about that. I have I've put myself in the position that I'm in, and I feel honor-bound to do the best I can with it. And I don't think that I'm ignorant of that fact. I think that there are days when I wake up and I know that everything I'm doing is a cruel joke and I'm not sure if I'm the punchline or the person telling it. But it's not a great way to live. My next question is, how do you honor them? And I already feel like I have a pretty solid understanding of what my relationship with Lester is, so I'd like to sort of make things even messier if I possibly can in a different way.
Yes.
Please.
And I think maybe if everybody's cool with this, and again, I don't want to like invent relationships that are uncomfy to the point of not being interesting for us to play with, but I think that possibly the person I am trying to honor is Sarah Bailey, and I think it's maybe because there's no other way for me to have a close relationship with her. I think that this is a woman who I see leading the community, and I think I admire her deeply. I think I am attracted to her, and I think that I know that is not anything I can ever get even remotely close to in any way. Yes. And the best that I can do is I can try to do good work in my job and keep my community safe and upstanding so that she can do the transformative work that she needs to do. And I think that there are days when I believe more in the work she's doing than the work that I'm doing. But when I am trying to think of, like, someone who has upstanding ideals and who is willing to fight for them even when the work is hard, that's who I'm thinking of. And I think that's part of why I'm, like, so angry about this situation with Lester and Viola even more, because I'm like, all you had to do was, like, not go near that lady. Like, all you had to do. I do it every day, dude. Like, what are you doing?
This is going to get so good.
Yeah. I think that's my answer there.
Oh, I love it.
I'm so stressed, you guys.
Very good.
And last but absolutely not least is Eliza with Bees.
First off, before I get started, I want to make sure everyone has enough water and maybe some bread, because it's going to get real spicy. So, Eliza is tied to Andre and Sarah. Eliza Friedman is a black woman, the mother of Nathaniel Friedman. Eliza Friedman was born enslaved and emancipated as a young child. In her long life, she has seen worse things than Pinkertons and coal operators come through these hills. She intends to outlast them all. So, two questions. Why do you avoid them, and how do you keep them safe? Now, first one, why do you avoid them? She avoids Andre Pellegrini to no extent. He is this smooth-talking, accented white man that came out of nowhere.
She's calling him.
Yeah.
And he's sniping just, the boy.
He's got all this flair and all this swag, and she sees right through it. Uh-huh. She's like, boy, you won't do nothing but play with mud all day. I don't want to. So she doesn't give him the time of day.
That's really important to me. There needs to be one person in this community that's just like,
Oh, yeah. Eliza just sitting back on a rocking chair like, And the second question, why do you keep them safe? Well, Sarah Bailey, because in everything, which I want to touch on the miscarriages for a moment. The whole time that all this has happened with these miscarriages, I feel that has also fed into why she feels powerless to protect her husband. You know, it just feeds into that. And so out of everyone, you know, she, you know, you have an issue, you come to Eliza, she'll talk to you.
Yeah.
She'll tell you, you know, she's the one that you come to advice for. If you follow it, that's on you. And so she's spoken to Eliza plenty of times about this, and Eliza is just kind of, you know, knowing how difficult it can be and seeing how it's affected other women in her long life.
Yeah.
She understands how much of a not just physical, but emotional toll it can take on a woman.
Yeah, absolutely.
So she's just, you know, that motherly instinct kicks in, and she's just like, baby, I got you. Come here. I'll talk to you. I'll take care of you.
Thank God. So, Sarah needs someone to talk to.
Yeah. And she sees, you know, Eliza being as wise as she is, she sees the potential in Sarah. She sees how she can be a strong force in the community, and she wants to make sure that it's for the right thing.
Absolutely. I love it. All right. So that's our character relationships, everybody.
Yeah.
This episode of One Shot features music from the following artists: The Wanderer by Third Age, Years Gone By and Finally Home by Brent Wood, Wildlands by Sounds Like Xander, Brothers by Heartland Knights, Vineyards of Venice by Cody Martin, Maybe in the Next Life by Ian Karlowski, Swamp Jam by Dreamland, and Troublesome Teddy by Brandon Adams. This episode of One Shot was edited and sound designed by Tracy Barnett. You can find more of their work online, anywhere, at The Other Tracy.
Well, heroes, that's it for One Shot this week, but don't worry. We'll be back next week with more The Price of Coal. In the meantime, be sure to check out one of the other amazing gaming shows here on the One Shot Network, like Skyjack's Courier's Call, an all-ages-friendly actual play podcast set in the world of Sphere. Skyjack's Courier's Call follows three teens as they set out as new apprentices aboard an airship with the Swiftwell Courier Service, bringing mail and adventure across the world. Featuring Drew Merzieski, Palomi Pertap, Aaron Catano-Saez, and Ali Grauer, and using the Cortex Prime system, this show is perfect for anyone just getting started listening to actual plays, and veterans of the tabletop genre alike. Join clever but anxious Kieran, bold, fast-talking Cece, and the loyal and strong June aboard the Red Audrin ship as they sort and deliver mail, encounter powerful magic, and learn the proper skills of an Erinner along the way. Right wrongs, do mercies, and take flight. As always, we end One Shot with a call to action. Heroes, I'd like to urge you to go out and call your representatives. Calling a representative is a great way to directly advocate for an issue. It's a way that many elected officials keep a temperature of what their constituents are looking for, and because not many people do it, an individual caller can make a huge difference. When I call my representatives, I use a site called 5calls.org. That's the number 5calls.org. There you can find a list of issue summaries from around the country, along with contact information for your reps and scripts to read while you're on the phone to help you get your message across. Calling is quick, and it can make a vital difference. Thanks, heroes.
As always, a humble and hearty thanks to our supporters on Patreon. If you want to help us in a non-monetary way, the best thing you can do is tell a friend. You can also leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Every 5-star review we get helps new people find the show. For the latest One-Shot news, be sure to follow me on Twitter at OneShotRPG. Look us up on Facebook at facebook.com/OneShotPod, or look for news on the site at OneShotPodcast.com. If you want to inquire about ad rates, live appearances, commissioning episodes, or you have a general question or comment for the show, contact us at GameMaster@OneShotPodcast.com. One Shot is a production of the One Shot Podcast Network in association with Paracosm Press. Paracosm Press is a Chicago-based tabletop games publisher. You can find more information at paracosmpress.com. Finally, that music, which is right now swelling up over my voice, is Adventure by Be Your Own Pet, courtesy of Infinity Cat Records. See you next time, heroes. In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Allie Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjack's role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more.